Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC live here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno here in the studio. Lots going on today. Later on the show, Gab Marcotti will be here to explain why Italy decided to stick with Roberto Mancini as their coach. Also, Frank LaBeouf joins us and Stuart Robson as well. Talk about Manchester United and the latest saga in them looking for a new coach. We kick things off where else? But Orlando last night, the US men in action against Panama in a must-win game for their quest to qualify for the World Cup. 13 minutes into this one, Godoy brings down Zimmerman. Penalty.
You think? Are you allowed to choke hold people? Are you allowed to grab people by the neck with two arms extended away from the body? I don't think you are. Once they go into VAR, there's no question this is a penalty. 100% a penalty. No doubt about it.
So, Jesus Ferreira took the ball, as we saw in the Chelsea game, didn't we, in the final, a few months ago, like acting as a decoy. So he would just absorb all the abuse from everyone. Oh, and once all that abuse had stopped.
Oh, good fake out, guys. We didn't know that Pulisic was going to take the penalty.
His record isn't great, is it? Pulisic then scores to make it 1-0. And then Pulisic would be involved again here, picking the ball up on the near side. He'd be brought down. The referee would play advantage. Ball played in. And the much maligned Areola makes it 2-0.
Good work initially from Christian Pulisic, and then good serves Anthony Robinson. Areola with a run coming from the weak side, gets across the defender, nice flick on header to the back post. Una.
And then 4 minutes later, it would get even better for the hosts. Areola lays it off to Ferreira, who makes it 3-0.
Oh, that's my kind of range, Dan. Broken play down the right-hand side, eventually it does fall to Ferreira. Good work from Luca de la Torre. I thought he was really good throughout the course of the night. And then 4 yards out, I can handle one of those.
And then we go in a stoppage time, and it's Godoy once again who gives away the penalty.
Aníbal Godoy having a bad night. This one a little tighter than the other one, but still it's a flailing arm. And then as he twists around, he also hits the ball with his arm. So either way, penalty kick. And are we going to fall for the decoy again?
Well, it happened again.
Okay.
Pulisic then gets his second to make it 4-0. Nice worm celebration as well, which we learned was dedicated to a young boy that's fighting cancer. And then a little bit of pushing, a little bit of shoving here. Ali, you love all this.
I like it. I like it. I like the attitude, but then remember, you're winning for nothing, so now step away. You don't need to be bullied. You don't need to take this. So yeah, a little bit of fight, and then okay, 4-0, let's walk away.
Yep, so 4-0 would be the score at the break. And we take it into the second half. We would just see one more goal for the US. By the way, no cards were given in this incident. But what a goal it was from Christian Pulisic to get his hat trick.
And it's good work again from Luca de la Torre. Anthony Robinson always involving the attack down the left-hand side. That first touch gets him around the defender. A little bit of good fortune that first touch. But then it is just gorgeous between the legs of the defender. Ay, mama! See you later, fly by, and then tapping finish. Hat trick, this is just delicious from Christian Pulisic. The calmness, the confidence, the finish, the result. Perfection from the United States, perfection from Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, celebrations all around. We would see Panama get one back, but it is all the US, and it's very much now in their hands. As long as they don't lose 5-0 against Costa Rica, they will automatically qualify. Let's welcome in for more on this, shall we? Former US international Jermaine Jones is with us. Jermaine, almost a perfect night for the US.
Yes, I would say it was a perfect night. If you look at it, it was 3-0 after almost 26 minutes. So the game was over after 26 minutes. It was just, you know, getting now you're confident and moving forward to the game in Costa Rica.
Indeed. And you take a look at it, inevitably, Christian Pulisic grabs all the headlines. And these are the sort of performances that the US fans, Jermaine, are crying out for from him.
You know, we all know we all call it the Captain America. He's the special guy on the team. But I think yesterday was a team performance and he was just the top on everything. You can say like the cream on the cake, you know. So of course he played amazing, but I think it's important to say that the whole team played good. You had a kind of a little bit of floppiness inside with Stefan, where, you know, they can come back. But there was not really any chance in Panama from the beginning. They tried to play a little bit thirsty. They tried to get on the edge. You know, when you see the two penalties, 100% two penalties, there's no question about that. And I think USA and the team was completely in control the whole time.
Obviously, aside from Pulisic, you mentioned it was a great team performance. Who in particular impressed you?
You can see there's a lot. This is like, if you look at Pulisic was good, Jesus was good, Areola when he scored his goal, Adams, if you see how much work he's doing for the team, he's on point the whole last game. So I would say that this team is special, and now they have a tough game in Costa Rica. But I think if we can make it and go to this World Cup, I think we will have an excited group to watch.
Who impressed you, man?
Luca de la Torre. And there is an amount of confidence and calmness when he has the ball in his feet that gives this team something different through the midfield. It isn't full speed all the time. Sometimes he slows it down. Sometimes he goes at pace. The recognition in that moment and when to go at pace, when to slow it down, when to lay the ball off, when to run at people. You're seeing a variety from him out of the midfield that I don't think you see all that often from the United States. I thought he was really good. But, of course, when you talk about the United States and the expectations of the United States, you start and end with Christian Pulisic. And whether he likes it or not, whether he likes the attention or not, we're all paying attention to see what his performance is like. And so following what was a positive result against Mexico and Azteca, there was some criticism on Christian Pulisic because he wasn't nearly as active on the ball as you thought he would be. More conversation about Gio Reyna than there was about Christian Pulisic. And so there was something in this performance from Pulisic that I thought was very good. And it's not the three goals by themselves. It's the attitude. It's the aggression. It's the edge and that spirit that you saw from him and you saw from the whole team. When the United States play with this competitive aggression, when they play with this sort of attitude, and then they add quality in the final third because they have talent in the attacking half, I believe that they're untouchable in this region. However, they don't always play like this. They don't always compete the same way. They don't always have that same attitude. They put it together yesterday against Panama, and it was clear to see.
Why doesn't he do it more?
It's a question that he has to answer himself. He is so important to this group because he gives them something different, something that they don't have. And this is when Gio Reyna also plays a part. If Gio Reyna is on the field more often, then I think that takes pressure away from Christian Pulisic from doing magical things, because Reyna is capable of doing it as well. But this sort of move, this sort of performance, this sort of productivity, and then the attitude that came with it, is something that he has had difficulties finding consistency. And to me, I think it's him trying to take responsibility for being what Jermaine just called Captain America. He is Captain America, and he's going to have to be. And I think sometimes for him, there's been a reluctance to be that. No, now you got to step to the forefront and you got to be that guy. He was that guy against Panama.
Jermaine, what's the key for him finding these performances consistently now at the national level?
I'll be honest, like, I think it's really that the team around him, you know, the team has to play on a good standard level too, so that he can come to his next level, because I believe he's still young and too much pressure on a young guy can be a lot too. So he knows every time he's coming back home to play here for his country and represent his colors, that everybody looks that he has to have that game what he had yesterday. So that's a lot of pressure. This is why I say you have to call out guys like, you know, Reyna, you have to call up Adams, you have to call out then Weston McKennie. That's the guys that step it up too. They're playing for big teams in Europe too. So that's not only like Christian Pulisic has to come up here and always make the difference. Of course, we all know and we all wish that he can do it and he would do it every game, because I played with him. He's an amazing player. He was young in the back in the time. But I think we still have to be careful because he's still young. And, you know, he plays in Chelsea amazing because there's not every day on every weekend the light on him. But every time he comes back home and plays for his country, the lights is on him and he has to make special things. And if it doesn't work out and he scores goals, then maybe people criticize him and say he has not a good game. But so we have to be careful and let him be himself. And he will shine. He's a good player and he will be a big light in the future.
Jermaine, has he got the character worthy of being able to take all that responsibility?
Oh yeah, he has, and I can tell you this firsthand because I played with him, and he came up, and we looked at him as a young boy, and we were thinking, okay, he has something, but let's see what he's doing. And the moment he stepped on the field, he showed everybody that he would be a difference maker, and I think you can see it already. He wins cups with Chelsea, he wins cups with the national team, and he, of course, he's the face of UF soccer, you know, in this country. But I think we just have to be careful and help him to, you know, don't get burned out because the pressure and everything around him, it's getting too much.
Jermaine, we know everybody on social media, every man and his dog has got an opinion about who Berhalter should play. It was quite a majority of those who didn't think Areola should be anywhere near the starting 11. Obviously scored, obviously as well involved in the other goal as well. Psychologically, how does that affect you? How do you get over that sort of social media hate that surely is almost impossible to avoid?
You know, this generation, they all, they love social media. So we older guys, we maybe get freaked out back in the days if you hear negativity and all that stuff. But these young guys, they grew up with it. So they know how it is. They get criticized through social media. And then, you know, you come out there, that's the best answer. Score a goal, play a good game, and you shut down every conversation about your personality. So I think the only thing you can do is really going out there, you know, in improve the people wrong on the field, and that's what he did.
Meanwhile, let's just check out what else is happening in CONCACAF qualifying. Mexico, of course, have struggled so far. They really needed a result against Honduras, and they've been struggling to score goals, haven't they? In fact, they almost found themselves behind as Lopez with the shot. Ochoa, though, making the save here to keep it goalless.
Long ball over the top. Kevin Lopez gets on the end of it, hits a good volley, but straight out Ochoa, he makes a save.
But in the end, with 20 minutes to go, Edson Álvarez very much the hero.
And you thought it might have been Raúl Jiménez at the near post. It's actually Edson Álvarez, who just behind Raúl Jiménez is able to get that header onto the far post, sneaks behind Raúl Jiménez, gets a flick on header, open over the goalkeeper, 1-0.
Mexico very much in control of their own destiny with regards to qualifying. Meanwhile, the U.S. were hoping that El Salvador could do them a favor as they were taking on Costa Rica yesterday. Antti Contreras with the bicycle kick to open the scoring, though, for Costa Rica. Ready?
Whoa! Resourceful finish. Poor defending at the back post from El Salvador. Missed clearance onto the path of Antti Contreras, who does so very well in reacting to it, and the execution is perfect. That is gorgeous, Dan.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Take a look at the clock there. Just coming up to, what, the 30th minute. Take it forward, 33 seconds, and Christian Hill would make it 1-1.
Hey, next 5 minutes, guys. Let's keep it tight. Let's keep it. What? No.
Joel Camp, this must be like his 700th goal, surely, for Costa Rica. Makes it 2-1. That's happened, giving them a much-needed victory to keep their hopes alive of qualifying for the World Cup. Meanwhile, Canada taking on Jamaica. A win for Canada would see them book a place in the World Cup for the first time since 1986. 30 minutes into this one, Kyle Larin makes it 1-0.
It's a good ball from Steven Eustachio, finding Kyle Larin. Diagonal run, and a nice little finish.
Then on the stroke of halftime, Buchanan makes it 2.
It's just poor defending from Jamaica, the near post. KJ Buchanan is able to get onto the back post, a whole lot of time to bring it down and finish.
And then with 8 minutes to go in the game, Junior Hoyler makes it 3-0.
Almost walked into the 18-yard box. Well, Tiny Rikana is walking and Hoyler is walking as well. And Jamaica's not defending, and that's a nice finish.
And then late on in this one, Mariapa with the own goal.
I know. Mariapa! No!
So it finishes.
No. Oh, off his shin. Flick on. 4-0.
Celebrations all round then as Canada take all 3 points, which means that nobody can catch them with regards to stop them qualifying for the World Cup. They are through. Of course, no Alphonso Davies. He's struggling with long-term effects from COVID. He streamed his celebrations and they were so cool and so genuine. From the Bayern Munich fullback. How cool is that? They, of course, took in place for the first time since 1986, over 30 years since Canada made it to the World Cup. Jermaine, these are great pictures, aren't they, of Davies?
I love it, but you know what it is? Like you can see the pressure from a young guy release all the pressure 36 years later or 35 years later, now going to a World Cup for his country. So it shows again like how much pressure this young guy is already, have around them, playing in big clubs and then representing their country.
Yeah, it seems a great collective, Jermaine. And they seem a very likable team.
I think the games I saw from Canada, to be honest, they played a really interesting game. You know, they're going fast forward. They're not really, backing down. They score one and they want to keep going and then attacking soccer. And it's really interesting how they're reshaped and rebuilt something. And it will be interesting to see them at the World Cup.
It's the belief they seem to have in themselves to go toe-to-toe with whoever they're up against. That's what makes them so impressive to watch.
Right. And I think it's a confidence that comes from the fact that they've rebuilt, as Jermaine just alluded to, a structure within the national team. So these guys have been playing together for a long time. These guys know each other very well, and they know that whatever they are achieving, they are building together. So when you're a team and you then build something together and then you're able to get the results that back up all the work that you put into it, then that confidence multiplies exponentially. And that's exactly what's going on with Canada, is that they build it together, they're getting the results, and now with every positive result and with every achievement that they're able to, when they come together and they're able to put it together and they're able to get to the World Cup, now it's telling them we're doing the right things, and now we've opened ourselves up for a whole world of different possibilities. Going to the World Cup is a dream come true for guys like Alphonso Davies, but certainly for Canada as a whole.
Who goes further in the World Cup, Canada or the US, Jermaine?
Say it again.
Who is going to go further in the World Cup when they both qualify, obviously, in November? Who would your money be on getting him through the group stage, making it further within the competition?
Of course, I'll have to go with USA. So America will go definitely farther. I wish both teams, both countries good luck in the World Cup, but of course my colors is America, so I'm going for America.
We want objective analysis, Jermaine. Come on, man. We've just been nice about Canada. Thank you very much, mate. Much appreciated. Just a reminder, Football America's for more analysis is where it all went right for a change. For Greg Berhalter, be sure to check that out. Available here on ESPN+. Plus, Casey Keller joins Seben Herc.
Hello.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, the fallout continues after Italy failing to make it to the World Cup. Mancini stays and changes, says Gazzetta. Meanwhile, Correa going forward with Mancini. This is what Roberto Mancini had to say about staying on as the coach of Italy. I talked to Gabriele Gravina, who are aligned on everything. There are important national teams that have not won anything for 60 years.
Okay.
Italy is a little further ahead in this, despite some disappointments. Sometimes we exaggerate, saying that we must necessarily look for the reasons. I'm pleased that the work done in these 3 years has been appreciated. It's not just the European Championship. These players must also be given credit for the long streak of matches without defeat. We don't just have good players. These are special guys who have created an exceptional group. Here, there is a perfect group that seemed ideal for me to achieve success. Come on, let's welcome in, shall we? Stuart Robertson's with us, as is Frank LaBeouf. And we've got to start, haven't we? Gab Marcotte, are you buying this, Gab?
Buying what?
behind the fact that it's been an exceptional group, a perfect group that seemed to be able to achieve success.
Yeah, I mean, you can decide where you want to set the bar with exceptional, but I think the turnaround really has been exceptional. And, you know, obviously, huge failure not qualifying for the World Cup, and we can all have a right giggle about that if you're so inclined. But they're going in the right direction. They're going in a new direction, which is something that I never thought I would see in many, many years of watching Italian football. And, you know, could Mancini have done a better job? Mainly, maybe. But ultimately, you know, you work with the players you have. And changing a manager isn't suddenly going to turn Ciro Immobile into Robert Lewandowski or Lorenzo Insigne into Kylian Mbappe. And anybody who thinks that is a freaking idiot.
Stuart Robson, welcome to the show.
Is that you bring me in because I'm a frigging idiot? But anyway. I have to say, I agree 100% with Gav. Mancini's done a great job up until the last few games. I mean, they had an unbeaten run for a long time. They were a poor team before he took over. They aren't the best players in the world by any means. He did brilliantly to win the European Championships with them. Even in the game the other day against North Macedonia, they played some good football. There were some outstanding performances. But, and he mentioned his name, they've got a problem. They haven't developed front players for many years now. That's been the problem with Italy. If they had a good front player, a player that could hold it up, could do all the aspects you want from a front player, they would still be in the World Cup and they'd be a top-class side. Unfortunately, they're not producing top-class strikers at the moment.
Well, neither are North Macedonia.
Yeah, did you say? Well, North Macedonia had one shot in the 90 minutes. I think Italy had 36 shots. They didn't create, I wouldn't say 1v1s, but they had lots of chances, half chances. This was the goal. Question handball, it wasn't. And Donnarumma probably wasn't ready for it when they were going for extra time. North Macedonia, a break out the blue, good shot from distance, a player that used to play for Palermo as well, playing at the ground where he used to score goals. I mean, Italy were very unlucky on the night. They just didn't create enough when balls came into the box. And I have to say, North Macedonia defended absolutely brilliantly when balls came into their box from crosses.
Gab, is your view shared amongst most Italian supporters? Are they this grounded and this kind of big picture looking at? It's crazy.
I don't think it's crazy at all. There's obviously people who, you know, who are very angry and people wanted Mancini gone. But, you know, it's not like there's an obvious sudden candidate to replace him. I think most people actually are angry at the players for what they felt was a letdown there. They're angry at Jorginho for missing those penalties. They're angry at Immobile for not burying chances. And look, it's obviously not just the North Macedonia game. It's the penalties missed against Switzerland home and away. It's that silly goal they conceded to Bulgaria. Those are matches that they absolutely dominated and should have brought home. And they didn't. And that's why they're not going to the World Cup. And deservedly so. But I think a lot of people are taking a wider view. And even then, when you know you look back at Mancini's coaching, this isn't a situation where they're like, oh, look, you know, he's a fool because he should have called him, or he's a fool because he should have made this substitution. You know, there really isn't. I mean, we can all nitpick, and in fact, that's what we do every night here on the FC show. But you know, there isn't like a list of five things. Sorry, oh. That Mancini got wrong. There's no such thing that everybody can point to and say, oh yeah, those are five glaring mistakes he made. There really aren't.
Frank, do you want to talk about Italy or Gareth Bale?
No, I want to talk about Italy because, you know,
Gareth
we
Bale
share many things with Italians, you know. No. I want to talk just about something about Italy because we know we try to share the first part of fashion, the first part of cuisine, food, the first part of winery, you know. But I think we are sharing the spot of vanity as well, you know. If the Italians all think, you know, that they are doing great right now, not being qualified for a World Cup, and again, not being qualified for the next one, I'm pleased, you know, we can share that first spot of vanity with the French people and the Italians because I think they don't see the big spot there. Yeah, they do well. Yeah, they won the European Championship. But how come you can be pleased with the team we didn't qualify twice for the World Cup? It would have been a desperation everywhere in every country in the world, but Italy and maybe France. So we share another spot with Italy.
Well, you know what, Frank, it worked out great. I remember when I was a kid, and you may remember this too, 1990, France didn't qualify for the World Cup. 1994, France didn't qualify for the World Cup. What happened afterwards? You know what happened, because you were there. France won the World Cup, and then they won the Euros in 2000. You know, I'll settle for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so no, but I agree with you. And it's always when Italy is deeply in the, I won't say the word, that they get they get something back. 2006, 1982, that's where Italy didn't had some problems, you know, and became champion of the world. I totally agree with you. That wasn't the way that I wanted to discuss about. I just say that, you know, it's a big deal for Italy to not being qualified, because it's a big country of football. It's one of the best country of football, and not seeing Italy twice in a row, it's a disaster for Italy. It's also a disaster for the world of football.
Italy, of course, the big story this week. Also something we've discussed at length as well is Gareth Bale, who withdrew from the Classico but then put in that incredible performance as Wales beat Austria to book a place in the final of the playoffs. Frank, I think it's the first time we've had a chance to talk to you about this whole situation. I'm fascinated to know what you think.
In fact, I talked, but you weren't the anchor man that night, but I only say that I don't know if he was really injured when he supposedly fainted to not willing to play for Real Madrid and at that game. And we talked about that. I think Gab was there. And we say it's possible for you to have a good game for an hour for your national team. And I think it would have been stupid for him to refusing playing for Real Madrid just before an international game, where it would have helped him to get in a better shape. So I don't buy it right now. I have no evidence that he did it on purpose, that he didn't want to play for Real Madrid. If you have other stuff to say to me, tell me. But really, he had a good game against Wales. You can pretend for one or two games to do well, but we all talk about consistency. And not playing for your club doesn't bring consistency. And at some point, you can get injured or not getting the level that you want to be in.
Robert, we know something that shaped you as the bitter person that you are is the injuries that you had when, of course, you're a young player. I'm just wondering, looking at the way that Gareth Bale has approached his last three or four seasons at Real Madrid, how that makes you feel considering what you had to suffer.
It doesn't make me feel particularly good. I mean, from my point of view, every time you could get out on the field, you wanted to play because you had to prove that you were fit. You had to prove that you were ready. You had to prove that you'd done all the training while you had been injured. But it was also the times when I did refuse to play because I knew I wasn't quite fit enough. And that's probably what Gareth Bale's done on several occasions, but he hasn't played enough. And I don't think it's just Gareth Bale. You have to look at the relationship between Real Madrid and Gareth Bale when Zidane was the manager. He didn't really want him in the team. Ancelotti put him in the side at the beginning of the season. Whatever happened, he took him back out the side. And even when he's looking at the substitutes, he doesn't really want to bring him on. He doesn't want to bring Hazard on because he doesn't think they're going to do the job. And Gareth Bale, for too long now, has been a bit part player or not a player at all.
What's going to happen next to him, Robert, do you think? Obviously, his contract's up at the end of the season.
Somebody will take a chance on him. He'll have to lower his money expectations, of course. He's got to get himself fit. He's got to enjoy football again. He's got to play week in, week out. And as Frank said, he's got to play with consistency. If you play once every 3-4 weeks, you are going to get injuries because you're not going to be fully fit. You're not going to be accustomed to the cut and thrust of the game. So he's got to get to a club where he's going to play week in, week out and make sure that he can show what a good player he has been over the years.
Frank, how would you handle a teammate like this?
Well, at first, I think I will go to him and I will talk to him and I will say, you know, I don't understand what you're doing right now. You know, you're a fantastic player. You showed it when you were playing for Spurs. You know, what's going on with you? Because it's really up to him to get better and to be more involved in the football world, because he has all the talent that that a footballer will dream about to be successful. It's And I will tell him, you know, at the end of your career, you will have regrets. Because a football career is fantastic as much as you play, as much as you win. Yes, he played some games. Yeah, he won some fantastic titles with the Champions League. But I don't think he's fulfilled by the happiness of playing week in, week out in La Liga. And something is missing, and something's going to be missing to him. And after, if he doesn't want to listen and doesn't want to make any effort, I will, at the end of the day, ignore him, because you have to think about your own career, and you have to make sure that the other teammates will play alongside you the best they can.
Speaking of something missing, there was no box in the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which I thought was disappointing, given what we saw last week.
Come on.
You can check that out.
It's like a commitment, really.
Over on the website. Just a reminder then, a full programme of La Liga matches as Spanish football returns this weekend. You take a look at Saturday, Real Madrid away against Celta Vigo. The big game, no doubt about it, though, is at the Camp Nou, second versus third, Barcelona against Sevilla. All of these matches live on ESPN+.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, Manchester United are still looking for a new coach. Reports have suggested that Ten Hag is the favourite, 3-1 on, to make the move from the Eredivisie to the Premier League. Pochettino still in the mix at 5-1. But some interesting quotes attributed to Louis van Gaal, the former Manchester United coach, about the possibility of Ten Hag taking over. He should choose a football club, not a commercial club. Of course, a man who knows it firsthand, what it's like to be in charge at Manchester United. Gab, do these quotes have any relevance to what we're going to see happen in the summer?
I mean, well, first of all, I'd love to know, you know, obviously given Van Gaal's history with Ajax, does he actually speak to Erik ten Hag? Does ten Hag listen to him? I'm assuming ten Hag reads the newspapers, is familiar with the Glazer Out campaign, knows that what's happened at the club in the last 10 years. And he's aware of all this, just as he's aware, perhaps, that there's, you know, there's been a change at the top, Richard Arnold taking over for Ed Woodward. And all these things come into it. So just rubbishing Manchester United because you, Louis van Gaal, had a bad experience there and you didn't like Ed Woodward and the owners and you didn't like the way you were sacked, whatever, that's fine. But, you know, there's a new guy on, there's a new guy in charge at the top. There's new people in position of power. Well, not new people because they've been there forever, but Darren Fletcher and John Murta now, you know, for the past year or so, they've been promoted into this more senior role. And do your research. You know, it's as simple as that. Are United very commercial? Yes, they are. Do the Glazers maybe care more about making money than they do about winning? Probably, but they still spend a ton of money. Most of it foolishly, but they do spend a ton of money. So from that perspective, if you're Erik ten Hag, if that's what you want, go in with your eyes open and don't worry about Van Gaal muttering away in the corner.
Speaking of muttering away, let's go to Robbo.
Hey!
what would you like to ask me, Dan?
Who would you choose?
Up until this season, I'd have said Pochettino was a fantastic coach. I thought he was brilliant at Spurs. They played good football. He turned them around from being a very average side. He made them winners up to a point. And I thought he would be the manager. But his experience at PSG, where he hasn't been able to get the best out of the players, he hasn't done particularly well in the Champions League, and they've struggled on occasions in their own league. So I'd have to go with Ten Hag because he seems to be a manager that gets the best out of players. He's done well at Ajax. He knows that they sell players. So he's had to keep rebuilding the side. And I think he's got a bit of a rebuilding job to do at Manchester United. What he's got to make sure is that when they buy players, he has a say in buying the players, and they're good players, and he gets a better team spirit, because there's lots of things that are wrong with Manchester United over the last few years, and it's not just been because they've been a commercial club. It's because they've made wrong signings, the managers haven't been quite good enough, they haven't got the best out of the players, and there seems to be a strange spirit at the club. He's got to change all those things when he goes there.
And of course, they've got to decide what going to happen with Cristiano Ronaldo. Interesting stuff with him talking about his future. Remember, he's got 1 year left at United at the end of the season after signing that two-year deal at the start of this campaign. He's been talking about his future and saying, I enjoy football and I still feel useful both at the club and the national team. I will decide when I want. If I want to play more games, I will. If I don't feel like it, I won't play more. It's that last sentence, Ali, which I don't quite see Cristiano Ronaldo adapting to.
No, because the whole statement is about his power to make the decisions. And at some point, that power is taken away from you. It gets to a point in your career where simply you're not doing the same things that you did back in your prime. And we're seeing the slow decline of Cristiano Ronaldo. And then there are moments in which he scores a hat-trick and like, oh, he's back. Cristiano is back. No, that is an outlier. That is not the direction in which we're going. And he knows this, but he's not willing to accept
right.
this. And so when that's taken away from him, for him to decide, see the big picture and say, you don't need me anymore. I'm not needed anymore. I'm not the best player anymore. I'm going to take myself out. I don't think he has that in his makeup. He's going to go for as long as he wants to go. And then he will be the one that says, I'm done with you guys. You're not done with me. I'm done with you. And that is the point in which he'll walk away. But that's not happening anytime soon.
Frank, what's interesting, there isn't Cristiano Ronaldo, who's unique from this perspective. Almost everyone that I speak to who retired from the game, they're almost like the last ones to know when to hang up their boots.
And it's sad because retiring is part of a career. You have to know where to stop to make sure that you don't show pity to the world where before you were showing gratefulness and that's what it is. And it's true that most of the time it's mostly your friends, your family saying, you know, you should open your eyes. You know, I see you playing. You were the best. You're not anymore. And all Ronaldo's fans, calm down. I'm talking about every player in the world, not only Cristiano Ronaldo, because I know I've been insulted by all of them saying, well, who are you to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo? Yes, of course, it doesn't need Frank Leboeuf to decide whether he's going to stop or not, or Ali Moreno or anybody else. He's going to decide, and really, I don't give a stuff. I'm just saying that it's part of football, it's part of your career to find the right time to give up your career. Because I remember Platini, because of an injury, giving up, and everybody was very sad. They wanted him to keep on playing, and it's the way you have to stop football, because you have to make sure people are going to regret you more than saying, well, you better get out, be getting out, because you're showing me pity.
Well, he's set the bar so high, Robbo, isn't he? He's already got 18 goals already this season. We're talking about it as if he's struggling week in, week out.
Well, he's not struggling every week. Some weeks he works harder than other weeks. And that's the problem. When you become an older player, when you start to lose that little bit of fitness and that little bit of energy, you do things to suit yourself and not the team. I've seen it in many, many older players that they then start to look after themselves. They get everybody else to do their jobs. They don't do the running they should do. And Ronaldo, to a certain degree, has done that in the last 3 years at Juventus and this year at Manchester United. On his day, when he feels fit and feels energetic, he's still a magnificent player. But there's too many games where he hasn't shown those same energy qualities.
Where will he be next season, Gab? Still at United?
I mean, the difficult thing is he has an enormous contract with Manchester United. You know, he makes something like £35 million a year. That's in excess of $40 million. He's still, if not the highest paid player in the world, then the second highest. It's him and Messi neck to neck. And so it's easy to say if United go to him, oh, go somewhere else. We don't want you anymore, hypothetically, or him to say, I'll go somewhere else. Well, for him to do that, I think he would almost certainly have to take a pay cut, probably a big pay cut. And for United to do that, I don't know, they have to basically pay him to go away at this stage. And at this point, they would look at it and say, you know what? You're still the most talented guy we have here. You scored 18 goals through the end of March. Stick around and we'll build your team around you. I mean, that's a decision that they're going to have to make. The other option is that he makes some sort of romantic end of career decision and takes a big pay cut and goes back to Sporting Lisbon or whatever. Maybe he does something like that. But I think he's right in the sense that he holds all the cards because he has that massive contract through 2023. And every time he steps on the pitch, you know, we can talk about declining skills and not playing to your salary. He's probably better and more productive than, you know, all but one or two Manchester United players.
Kind of still relevant to that conversation, Gab, we saw reports once again suggesting that Manchester United are going to put in a bid for Harry Kane this summer. Does Ronaldo's presence affect that at all?
You know what? I saw this report and I don't know for certain, but I'm just going to speculate here and suggest that 110% this comes from Harry Kane's agent. 100 and even the fact that they come out and say like, oh, and, you know, they're going to go and try to move this forward and get this done before they sign the new manager. I mean, Harry Kane might have had a logic last summer before Cristiano got there. And obviously they do need a center forward. But I refuse to think after all the mistakes that United have made that the new crew, you know, Arnold, Murta, and Fletcher would go out and spend so much money on Harry Kane and his wages and whatever while Cristiano's still there, unsure whether you can shift him without the thumbs up of their new manager. I mean, that would just be such a beyond demented move. I refuse to believe that United would do something like that. Now, if the new manager comes in and says, oh yeah, I'd love Harry Kane, I love Cristiano, we find a home for Cristiano, boom, let's do this, fine. But to go ahead and make a move like this, to commit so many resources without knowing who your new manager is and how you're going to play, would just be beyond silly.
But Robbo, what new manager wouldn't want Harry Kane?
I think most managers would want him, but if, and Gab just said it, if a new manager comes in and wants to play with a front three, with two wide players and a centre forward, then you've got a problem with Ronaldo. Are you going to play him on the left wing or the right wing? Because I tell you what, Juventus tried to do that on many occasions and he never stayed there. He went everywhere but there. So I don't, Gab's absolutely right. Until you've got a new manager, you know what system they're going to play, you can't go and buy Harry Kane unless you're going to play with two up front. And I don't think we know what that new manager would do. So yeah, you can't buy him just yet.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, plenty of video content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go to ESPN FC and subscribe. We see two of those finals, don't we, when it comes to European qualifying for the World Cup tomorrow. Portugal against North Macedonia. Are you covering that game, man?
Yes, I am.
What a treat.
I'll be in the studio.
ESPN 2.
Dress nice and everything.
People be nice to you. 2:30 Eastern. Be sure to check it out.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Also tomorrow, of course, those five second legs in African World Cup qualifying. Every single one on a knife edge going on into this tie. All of them available on ESPN+. We'll start off, shall we, with Nigeria against Ghana. Remember, that was goalless in the first leg. Nigeria favourites to go through as we welcome in. Oh, Nigerians home.
Here
Colin
we go.
Udo is with us looking ahead to this game. Both teams, are gonna, they can't be any, as bad as they were in the first leg, Colin.
Oh, no, certainly not. This should be a very, very good game. And I hope that of all the games going on this weekend, that's the one you choose to watch, because I still got a bone to pick with you for calling Senegal-Egypt the biggest game of the weekend last time out.
Well, yes, I know, but I'm not from Nigeria, Colin, so don't start having a go at me for that. Looking at the, if you watch the game, I was right.
Yep.
Let's focus on this from Nigeria and Ghana perspective. Obviously, you told us last time the rivalry between these two countries that then, of course, come out on the football pitch. Nigeria favourites. How big a disaster would it be if they don't qualify?
Oh, it will be an absolute disaster. Look, as it stands now, Nigeria are the favourites. Ghana, not quite. But Nigeria has invested a lot into trying to qualify for the World Cup. It's the reason that Genaro was fired with 2 weeks to the AFCON, because officials felt, look, they could afford to pass up on the AFCON just so they can make it to the World Cup, because it's an election year for the Football Federation in Nigeria. And if the team fails to qualify for the World Cup, that's going to spell a lot of trouble for the Federation. It's also going to lead to plenty of blowback, but on the team, the coaches, the federation. So there's a lot riding on not going to the World Cup. A lot of money also riding on it. The $12 million that are supposed to come in, $2 million in preparation, $10 million for at least making it to the group stage. Wow. So a lot riding on it, both for Nigeria and for Ghana.
What's your prediction?
I think Nigeria win 2-0. I mean, if you look at the first game, I was in Ghana. That stadium was pumping. It's a 40,000 capacity stadium. I think they got at least 50,000 in there on the day, because even the media stand, we had barely standing space to work with. So, and even with that, Nigeria still had the better chances. So coming home, I think the Super Eagles are going to win this one by at least 2 goals to nil.
Let's look ahead now to what is without a doubt the biggest of the matches that take place tomorrow.
Oh, come
Senegal
on.
Taking on Egypt. 1-0, of course, how it stands going into this second leg. Egypt with the advantage, but it is so fine, this advantage, isn't it, Colin? Colin's either refusing to talk to us because I've had
Sorry. I wasn't. I thought you were still going on. I didn't know you were finished.
He does not want to talk about Senegal.
He played me very well then. I was panicking. I was getting Ali getting ready to talk about Senegal. Right, Colin, who have you got going for this one?
Oh, yeah. I fancy Senegal for this one, to be honest. I mean, they've got a brand new stadium that they've built there. And, you know, we saw them, they're African champions. They beat Egypt on penalties at the AFCON. And 1-0 is a very small lead. And I think that Senegal have got the resources, they've got the personnel to overturn that and get past them, Egypt, and make it to the World Cup.
Senegal then to go through, according to Colin. Meanwhile, Algeria in action against Cameroon. This one 1-0 going into the second leg. No surprise when you take a look at who's the favourite. Algeria, of course, with that advantage and at home for the second leg. Big, big favourites. This would be a huge upset if Cameroon get this done, wouldn't it, Colin?
Oh, yeah, a massive upset. But here's what I think. I think Cameroon are going to go there and get a draw, but Algeria still make it to Qatar.
Yeah, that's the way it's looking, isn't it, considering that 1-0 advantage they picked up in the first leg. Elsewhere, you've got Morocco taking on Congo. That one 1-1 after the first leg. According to the bookies, the home advantage will pay for Morocco. And it really should, shouldn't it, Colin?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, Morocco are a superior team. Congo DR, they've got some great players coming through. I think I mentioned Bakambu the last time, but Morocco are just going to be way too strong for them, especially playing at home. When you go to a North African stadium and you sit down there as an opposition team or fan, you just don't feel like you're going to come up with anything.
And finally, Tunisia take on Mali. Tunisia with a 1-0 lead going into the second leg. Big favourites as well to advance. Any chance for Mali, Colin?
Well, you know, when we went into these playoffs, I did think that Mali were going to be the dark horses who would surprise people. But after that own goal at home, it's going to be tough picking them. But I still think that they might get a goal. And if Tunisia are not careful, Mali might stun them.
Ooh, Colin, great stuff as always. Good luck to Nigeria tomorrow. Let's see what happens. We'll be discussing those results on the next edition of ESPN FC.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Goodness me, what an eclectic mix of things we've had on today's show, and still more to come as Robbo and Frank are back to answer your questions for Extra Time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. The boys in black today. Look at that. Stuart Robson and I almost got in Frank Lampard again. Frank LaBeouf. I don't know why I keep doing that at the moment. Ali with us in the studio as well. Let's start with it, shall we, Ali? What country do you support during the World Cup?
I've had plenty of experience.
Yes, exactly.
Minnesota, I've never made it to the World Cup.
No.
So I've had my pick for many years. All South American teams.
Anyone from CONMEBOL.
Any South American team, whichever game they're playing and whoever they're playing against, I'm picking South America all the time.
Who do you support, Robbo?
Well, the team I would support in the World Cup aren't in it, Italy. So that's a bit of a disappointment. So who would I support? I'd probably go with, just for Frank's sake, I'll go with France.
You've got England caps hanging over your right shoulder, Robbo. What?
Yeah, but you don't want England to win, do you? You don't want to, you want to keep that myth that they can't win anything. You know, we can have, there's lots of television programs when they keep losing and doing badly. Not quite so many when they do so well.
Oh, it's all about your bank balance, not about people's happiness.
Always. It's always.
Oh,
I like that Colin. I like that Colin chap. He's got the right side of you, that's for sure.
I really thought that he'd gone. He did that beautifully.
So Robbo will not cheer for England at all.
No, it's Robbo. You know how bitter he is about
life. Well, why is he bitter?
He doesn't want to see people happy. He doesn't want to see people around him happy.
Hey, that's no way to
live. You saw what happened. You saw what happened at the European Championship final. The behaviour of the fans and the behaviour of everything that was going on around it. Disgraceful.
But what about the other people who weren't there? Those, your family, who I'm sure wanted England to win.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I don't think they like football. They don't like me, so I don't know what they're doing.
I thought you could say, I don't think they like me.
That too.
Frank, who would be your team if France get knocked out?
What? Germany.
Really?
I always love Germany. I don't know why. But it wouldn't be, and I'm very sad for Ali to be, to make him very sad in 1998, because he was supporting Brazil.
Oh, he has to bring that up.
Correctly.
Somehow we came to me, but it doesn't feel like it's about me.
Yeah, it's totally about you. It's totally about you. Yeah, I will. I think I will follow. I will follow Germany. I will follow Germany.
Yes, exactly. Sorry about 1998, Ellie. very sorry about that.
I was heartbroken.
Yeah, very sorry.
Take a detour into that. Dan, if you were transported to the 1990s, which ESPN FC member would you want to party with?
Oh.
Xhaka running London in his Maserati, Stevie in Liverpool, a 19-year-old Alejandro Moreno, or World Cup winning Mr. LaBeouf.
Oh, that's a good
against
question.
Against Brazil. Against the South American team.
So Robbo's obviously off, not even on the list.
It's not an option.
Dan, all I would say is, Dan, having had a couple of nights out with you, the only thing that I'm in charge of is making sure you get home. So let me just tell you that.
Yeah, I think you failed on that one occasion. Ali, no.
You're going to pass?
Yeah, I'm going to pass.
It's college years for me there.
It's Shirley Temple, so.
I know, but it's college years.
Right.
I mean, there are some moments in college.
I'm going to pass on it. I'd pass on Xhaka as well. Stevie in Liverpool or Frank would be awesome. Both of those would be brilliant nights out, wouldn't they? I think I'd put Stevie slightly ahead of Frank. Just because that Liverpool team. Parties they must have had must have been sensational.
Yeah, of course. I live in Paris and you want to enjoy Liverpool? I can't.
Oh, man.
Frank, Stevie seems to say making large amounts of money changes the way a player trains and affects his game on game day. Did your move to Qatar and increased salary affect the way you played?
Yeah, you know, yeah, of course, that the thing is, you know, like we talked about Ronaldo, there is a time to give up, and I really felt that it was my time to give up and to put a little bit of money in my bank account. So yeah, no, it didn't change anything in my football, because it was already the end of my football and nothing could have been changed.
Wow. Nice one, Frank. After the Legends game over the weekend, we saw Liverpool take on Barcelona, didn't we? Luis Garcia played for both teams, actually.
What?
Do any of the guys think they can still play? If so, how many minutes and how good of a performance do they think they can put out there? Let's go to you, Ali, because you do still play, don't you, with your son's team?
Yeah, well, I go and train every once in a while.
Yes.
And while I'm playing, I feel good. And mentally, I'm engaged, and mentally, I'm into what I'm doing, and I'm yelling at people, and I'm putting people in different places, and I'm demanding the ball. And then I stop. That night, I have some difficulties with pain. The next day, I cannot move.
Right.
And the day after that, having difficulties moving, my knees cannot hold up, my back doesn't hold up, and that's when you say, yeah, I can't do this anymore. Until the next week when I say, I can do it again, and we repeat this cycle and it never ends.
The bicycle kick, of course, is something.
Oh, well, yes, yes, from the Legends game.
Yes.
Where I thought I'd really jump, but I never got off the air. I never got off the ground. I went for it. I believed it. I saw it. Here I go, and mommy, couldn't quite get there.
Frank, we know you're still fit.
No.
You put endless topless pictures on Instagram.
I'm fit. Well, let's say that outside is quite okay. Inside it's a nightmare. But I think I'm not able to play anymore. If I play, it's just because it's for charity and I will just come for some minutes. I remember, you know, enjoying the 10 years that we played. We played after the 10 years of winning the World Cup. We played against a fantastic team, and I played in midfield, replacing Emmanuel Petit, and I played after at the back, and I played for 90 minutes. For 2 days, I couldn't walk, and I was like 40. I'm 54. I tell you, I can't follow the guys. Even for a minute or two, I cannot follow the guys. I know where I stand now, and I'm okay with some bicycle, a little bit of workout. Good for me.
Robbo?
Well, as Frank was saying, you start to get old, and you feel tired, you feel achy, and Ali said exactly the same. They were talking about when they were 40 and 45 and that sort of age. It happened to me when I was 24, so there's no chance that I'd still be playing football now. There's absolutely, if I played for 2 minutes, I'd be a cripple. So no good for me at all.
Can I tell you just a quick story of that Legends game and the realization that the game is gone?
Right.
Something that I would have done in my career with my eyes closed. The ball gets played down the channel. I see the center back coming out, and all I'm doing is I'm feeling his body and I'm turning, allowing the ball to get by me. And that would have been bread and butter.
Right.
Easily done in the prime of my career. I mean, no issues whatsoever. So I'm thinking the same thing. This ball got played down the channel. Center back is coming, and I'm thinking I'm gonna hold him with my body and I'm gonna turn him. And as I went to hold him with my body, he'd already gone and gotten the ball. And I'm like, what? Where did he come from? Oh man, it was so painful to just see it happen in front of you.
Ali, Kaká or Neymar? Who was a better player in their prime?
This is a good question.
Oh, I made you hit the table in that one.
Come on.
I'm going to say Neymar.
Really?
I'm going to say Neymar. The best of Neymar. We're talking about the very best of each player.
Yes,
the best
yes.
of Neymar, I think, is potential to be best in the world. It's just we rarely see it. And now we kind of make fun of Neymar for the player that he has become. But we tend to forget his very best is at a tremendously high level.
2007, Milan, Kaká.
Yeah. And that's why I tapped the table twice, because it's a difficult question.
We're running out of time, but I'm intrigued. Frank?
Yes, exactly the same as Ali. I think in the Neymar, this prime is definitely the best. Even if I love Kaká, they're not the same players, but Neymar has had something special.
Robbo?
No, Kaká. I'd go with Kaká every time. He was effective. He was a great player. Neymar, I've always seen him as a showman rather than a top-class player.
Ooh. Robbo hates a showman.
Yeah, he does.
What a tackle from behind.
We've been talking. This is naughty. This is the final question. And I didn't write this question.
Okay.
We've been talking a lot about haircuts and how much people spend on haircuts over the last couple of shows. How much do Robbo, Ali, and Frank spend on haircuts?
Okay.
That's mean.
Well,
that's mean.
I can tell you the answer.
Haircuts are Robbo.
So you're coming to me straight away? Okay.
The director did that, Rob. It's not me.
Yeah. Who's in charge of HR? It really affects me deeply. You know, I'm really disappointed. Really disappointed.
You know what? You know what, Dan? People think that we're not happy to be bald. I'm absolutely thrilled to be like I am. I don't want to have hair anymore. It takes like 5 minutes to shave my head. I wake up in the morning. I don't have to look at me in the mirror to know if it's okay. I don't want to go back there. I don't want to go back with any haircut.
Yeah, but Frank,
somebody asked me, I pay you. Yeah.
But Frank, everybody that has got a bald head and then has a beard is compensating for something. You're obviously compensating. You don't like it. You don't like being bald because you grow a beard.
No, because like that, I can hide a little bit of my ugly face. You're so beautiful, so you don't have to. That's why.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, kindness, I see.
And look at it, just bonding.
I know.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Happening right in front of our eyes.
It's lovely to see.
But the answer is $0.
Yeah, $0, I think, for everybody. So there we go.
I'm due for a haircut, by the way.
You love my haircut. You love my haircut. Ali, Dan, you love my haircut. I want to see you with no hair. I think I'm ready to pay $100 for you to shave your head once.
I'll shave my head for $100 for you, Frank.
If Dan goes bald, he's definitely going to wear a toupee. No question about it. He wouldn't go bald.
I think it'd be beautiful.
How did we get here?
I have no idea how we got here. What would happen if you didn't shave your head, Frank? Where does it grow?
Oh, well, exactly there. Look, you can see it there.
Yes.
Wow.
I have to shave tomorrow, so
right.
I know I normally do it every 2 days. I didn't do it. Yeah, and I have nothing. I have nothing anymore. I look like a priest, you know? Like Sean Connery, but really at the end.
What about you, Robbo?
Every 2 days I shave my head, and I haven't got much. I've got less hair than Frank has at the back. Let me tell you about that. No, very little hair at all.
There we go. ESPN FC, everyone, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yes, let's talk about something important. Yeah.
It's what the world wants to know.